Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are going to be diving back into the constitutional amendments. We left off at the 13th Amendment, the non-ratified 13th Amendment, and we will get back into that because that's where we left off. I just want to go through it one more time because I want people to understand that there was actually a different 13th Amendment that was proposed, and there's a lot of stirrings. There's a lot of research that has been done that basically asserts that that was a legitimate constitutional amendment. However, it was deemed that it was a retardant for people in law to be able to become politicians and be able to become representatives. And so it was scuttled by, well, I'm just going to use the word conspiracy. And so when this the next amendment, what we see is the 13th Amendment came along, they deliberately forced that in as the 13th Amendment. And, you know, people weren't watching back in those days. It's not like they had, you know, access to see if, you know, this, the web page changed. I mean, if you weren't there to watch the changing of the print 10, 5, or even 20 years later, it doesn't matter, even 1 year, how many people would really know and recognize or even stand out and say, hey, you know, it really took people later on in digging and doing research to find that there was actually a proposed 13th Amendment that is not the 13th Amendment that we have. That was a proposed amendment as well. And maybe that should have been the 14th Amendment. But as I tell people, you know, that go down these rat holes, how important is this? And I'll give you a great example because I have a few friends that always point out that Washington State's Constitution is illegitimate because it's not the Constitution was ratified by the people. What we have is some other Constitution. And I always ask these folks, what's the problem with the current Constitution as it was done? And they have these nuances and so forth. And I go, now, fact of the matter is there may have been a sleight of hand and somebody put in a different constitution and it didn't grant any more special real dangerous powers. It's not like it was it's not like it created the Soviet Union in the United States. So the fact of the matter is that whatever the constitution was that got inserted by sleight of hand over the course of over a century, because he says it wasn't ratified by the people. And I think that's the key point. It wasn't ratified by the people. And I say, well, how many amendments to this Constitution were ratified by the people? And they say, oh, a lot. And I go, so don't you think at this point in time, as the people have made amendments and everything else, that they've, you know, they've come to terms with this is their Constitution? I mean, really? And anyway, for some people, it's more about, you know, just the principle of trying to fix something. But are you really fixing something, or are you just really just getting the limelight that you've found this thing that'll actually fix the problem, but it doesn't really change anything? You know, oh, okay, now we have this other constitution. And how do you insert all these other amendments to that other constitution? Anyway, it's not worth the effort in trying to correct that one type of problem. However, when we look at usurpations of power, loss of liberty, and what we're looking at, Republic Review is not lipstick on a pig. Republic Review is actually the process that gets the federal government into compliance. It gets the states into compliance. And I actually had some really good conversations this weekend. In one of the conversations, I was patted on the back by, I'll just say, not necessarily a good friend, but a friend and associate. And the person was basically telling me, hey, you know, what you're doing is actually, you know, blowing blows, or you're taking swings with real impact. And he pointed out that there are all these other organizations out there. They're not leading and really driving blows. They may have these, what do they call, call to actions to call your senator and call your congressman. You got to stop this. But those things hardly ever do anything. He was talking about the John Birch Society specifically because, you know, he sees them as the way I do. I mean, we kind of look at them as the, you know, the puffy chest organization that claims to be the experts on the Constitution. And they're not doing, I mean, in comparison, they're not out there trying to get the people to rip, strip, and remove these politicians in office that have violated their oath of office and should be banned for life in addition to being removed from public service. And so why is it that other organizations don't do that? And that alludes to another conversation, because I want to reinforce some of these things I've told you before. We don't want to be an organization. And this gentleman I was talking to, I loved his position. He, too, is not looking to create an organization because he realizes once you've done that, then your job is maintaining relevance and operations of the organization than being able to do what you really need to do. So with that, that's one of the reasons why we choose to actually work with existing organizations. And it, to me, it's a testament when you find an organization like the National Liberty Alliance. Friends, this is an organization that has an open mind and embraces real solutions because they care about solving the problem. They understand the importance of uniting. And they understand the importance of actually having actionable things that work. So anyway, there's plenty of organizations out there that I call them, they just talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. And so now there you go. I want you to actually start looking at the people that are talking the talk. The talk is great. As a matter of fact, conservative entertainers, I poke them in the eye all the time. Many of these guys are coming up with these, like Mark Levin. Forgive me, Mark, for you're probably a great guy, but I mean, his Liberty Amendments, really? That's going to solve our problems of all the unconstitutional government? To me, I just view that more as an opportunity for somebody to make their mark on the Constitution so that their name can live down in the annals of history. Oh, that's the Mark Levin Amendment or what have you. But none of those amendments will actually get the federal government back into the framework of the existing Constitution. That's why Jefferson and Madison chose to enforce the Constitution and obtain compliance instead of trying to amend the Constitution. And I get really sick and tired of being labeled via lies and deceit that we're about a backdoor or some pathway to an Article 5 convention. Not at all. As a matter of fact, if you really look at what we're doing, the one amendment that should be the outcome, the first amendment that should be the outcome of Republic Review, is to strike and remove the Constitutional Convention in Article 5 process. In other words, just remove it because we don't need it. Once the states take their rightful position as the shareholders of this Constitution, that they're the owners, the plank owners of this baby, then they actually have more power in driving Congress in the ways that they need to. The states can definitely assert amongst the Senate and even the representatives to say, we need this constitutional amendment. And if they don't, then the state legislatures, literally, if you read the ratification debates, Madison was all over this stuff. He says that your state legislators and even your county legislators can make, you know, Congress's life a living hell. That by the time these guys come back, they would be replaced because these guys aren't doing what we need them to do. And that's one, to stay within the framework of the Constitution, and two, to actually help us. And so there are some ideas, and I would tell you that the first one would be striking and removing the Article 5 convention process out of Article 5. But some of these self-relevant organizations don't even want that. Oh, well, you know, they talk out of both sides of their mouth. Like I said, there's all these organizations that talk the talk. They don't walk the walk. And so I'm hoping this coming legislative season that we have an opportunity with the NLA and some of these other organizations that are coming on board and that we're working with. We're hoping that we can get right in front of these states legislators. I was going to say state senators, but state legislators who are actually considering Article 5 petition to go into a constitutional convention and actually point out, unlike anybody has ever done before, that there is actually a viable constitutional option in dealing with federal overreach, and you do not have to create an amendment to do so. All you have to do is enforce your constitution. You have all the power necessary. Get up off your tushies and do your job. Anyway, I've gone a little bit too long on my monologue. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show that provides academic evidence-based solutions. So with that, we are getting into the 13th Amendment as soon as we come back from this upcoming promo break that we have. So friends, we will be right back after this, and we will be getting into the 13th Amendment that doesn't exist, that actually occurred. And we're going to, and actually, I want to point out other amendments to you that were completely missed that you don't even know about, but they were attempted. And we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic review. Please read my argument for Republic review as well as my description of the Republic review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so actually, this 13th Amendment is a different 13th Amendment than the other one. And as a matter of fact, this one was actually authored by, and so the one 13th Amendment that we just read, so I'll go ahead and read it. This was proposed in 1810 and possibly ratified in 1819, but supposedly some of the evidence went missing. And so I will reread this again. If any citizen of the United States shall accept, claim, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor, or shall, without the consent of Congress, accept and retain any present, pension, office, or emolument of any kind, whatever, from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States and shall be incapable of holding any office of trust or profit under them or either of them. And so, like I said, you can go down and do the research on this and determine, well, you know, what was this really all about? And I believe this had a lot to do with the Bar Association and the establishment of the Bar Association, which is an English organization, or I should say a club or what have you. And bottom line, if you look at what this amendment did and what it was supposed to do, whether it really would have kept the federal government in check, because already at this point in time or shortly after this, they had, because at this point, I don't know if they were infiltrated by the bar and this new thing that was coming to the United States. But I mean, Monroe already violated the Constitution shortly right after this. And he wasn't a part of this cabal. And he actually allowed the Missouri Compromise to move forward, which forced states to be slave states, which was clearly not an enumerated power within the Constitution that the general government would dictate the direction or the position or self-actualization of a state. A state can't choose for itself whether it wanted to be free or slave. Anyway, this is another 13th Amendment that was proposed that was not ratified. And this was signed by President Lincoln. So in other words, you do realize that amendments are not signed by the president. They are signed by Congress, they're approved by Congress, and then they're sent out to the states. The president has, you know, no play in an amendment to the Constitution. Other than once it's ratified, he has to enforce it. Now, it is common that as soon as an amendment is passed through Congress, it does go to the president as informational, you know, here's a copy of what we're sending out for ratification. And that practice started all the way back with Washington with the Bill of Rights. Anyway, this is the 13th Amendment that was allegedly signed by, and actually there's great evidence that Lincoln did sign this. But anyway, this basically states, no amendment shall be made to the Constitution which will authorize or give to Congress the power to abolish or interfere with any state with the domestic institutions thereof, including that of persons held to labor or service by the laws of the said state. Now, I forget the guy's name. He wrote a really fascinating book on this, but the intent of this was an olive branch to the slave states that they were not going to abolish slavery as long as they stayed in the Union. And Lincoln was really promoting this, very similar to Coolidge promoting the labor amendment to the Constitution that failed as well back in 1926. And so if you understand what they're trying to do here, they basically tried to galvanize slavery, that there could never be an amendment made to the Constitution. In other words, what they were doing here was very similar to what they did in Article 5 of the Constitution in making it impossible before 1808 for Congress to make a constitutional amendment to stop the shutting down of the slave trade and to take the states, what's the best way of saying this, suffrage, because a state suffrage is their senators. And so the states couldn't lose their suffrage or their direct representation in choosing their senators in the Senate without their consent. And so that's why the 17th Amendment creates a conflict, because the Article 5 of the Constitution protects a state from being able to have their representation and suffrage torn away from them. Anyway, So let's get into the real 13th Amendment. The real 13th Amendment, which was proposed in 1865 and ratified in 1865, Section 1, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Section 2. Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. That became the common, you know, every amendment practically after the Bill of Rights, they started including this, and more often than not as went on. Because as you can tell, in the, in the 12th Amendment, as well as the 11th Amendment, they did not have this. So this was the first time they really did this. Just to make sure you understand, they wanted to make sure that Congress would be able to use legislation to enforce this. Does not mean, and I want you to be very clear on this, that this does not change the fact that the militia is the organization to enforce all laws. But guess what happened? They have already marginalized the militia, and by this point in time, the federal government was already creating its own enforcement agencies. And so as we move on, these things start, you know, unraveling because the federal government starts growing and nobody says anything. And people say, and as a matter of fact, they get hoodwinked by both the court, by lawyers, by politicians, corporations and banks and everything. There was a lot of collusion in allowing the federal government to aggrandize their powers. Now, here's the 14th Amendment. We've gone through this, and this says it was ratified under duress. But I'm telling you, it wasn't ratified under duress. The southern states were secession states. They could not just walk back in. They had to. And whether anybody followed, because the Constitution clearly doesn't have a paint by numbers or connecting the dots type of process. But clearly, any state that wants to become a state must petition the Congress to be able to come back into the United States. So when the southern states, this baby was actually ratified by the northern states enough to actually go into effect, and that is when they started allowing the southern states to come in, because then they had to accept and they had to acknowledge that there was this new amendment to the Constitution and that now they couldn't do any of these things. So Section 1 starts off with the citizenship of, because the Congress has already learned some of the shenanigans that the court has already done, because it was the Dred Scott case, I forget the year, 1851, 1853, something like that. But the Dred Scott case is a case where Dred Scott, a slave, petitioned for his freedom, and he won. He won in a court in Missouri, supposedly a slave state. They, a jury of 12 white men, set him free, and it was appealed. And the Supreme Court Justice Taney basically reversed the ruling and said black people can't be citizens. So this whole first part right here of this amendment in Section 1 resolve that issue, that it instantly made every freeman, every black in America, as long as they were born here or born to parents that were born here, they became citizens. And this is how they laid it out. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States wherein they reside. So in other words, if you're born in the United States and or you are subject to the jurisdiction thereof, and that's the really important part right there, friends, because if you are an alien in the United States, whether you're legal or illegal, you're not a citizen. So your children are not citizens. The children take up the jurisdiction of the parents. There was never a concept that, the government wants to take and strip away parenthood from you know, from parents that have children in the United States. That was not the intent, because that would have been what would have happened if people just came here, they were visiting, they had a child in the year they were here on educational purposes, professional purposes, it doesn't matter. Then they couldn't take their child because he was a citizen. He was awarded to the state. That was never the intent. The intent was to be very clear that only people here that were legally here and were under the jurisdiction of the United States and their children were born here, then they were citizens of the United States. So with that, we're going to get into the second part of Section 1, which is no state shall pass any law. And this right here, my friends, is where we need to roll up the Constitution and start poking every politician that's passing laws that violates our constitutional rights. This is where Section 3 and Section 1 come together as our weapon today to get rid of bad politicians. We'll be right back after this. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Yeah, so 14th Amendment haters, you know, point to this part of the 14th Amendment, are citizens of the United States and of the state where they reside. In other words, it created this, supposedly, the citizenship of the United States. But actually, if you go all the way back up to, and let me turn all the way up to Article 1, Section 8, and it takes a little while just kind of because I'm not using these hot links. But when we get into Section 8, it states right here that crimes, okay, so Congress shall have the power to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the laws of nations. Actually, it talks about citizenship here. And bottom line, the reason they drew that one line there in stating that they have the jurisdiction or have the power to define these things is because they were protecting the citizens of the United States. So people have been citizens of the United States actually ever since the very beginning of the Constitution. There's no doubt. I mean, nobody can really argue otherwise, but for some reason, the 14th Amendment haters think, oh, it made us subjects. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that we are now their property. No, we just have a, and as always, governments are instituted by the people. And therefore, we being a citizen of the government that we've created, and if we choose to, we could abolish, but I believe when you really look at the Constitution, everything is there that we need to help cleanse and put this, put the country back on track. You got to understand there's a difference between the Constitution and the government. The government are a bunch of people doing what they think is best. The Constitution are the boundaries and the limitations of what they can do and what they can't do legitimately. That's why we have to get the general government back into the framework of the Constitution. That's what Republic Review does. So anyway, the next part of Section 1 is what we call the Privileges and Immunities Clause. The following clause after this is the what we call the Due Process Clause that kind of ties into what the, I think the Due Process is the Sixth Amendment. Anyway, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of the citizens of the United States. Boom. Right there, that clearly states that your governor, your state legislatures, and anybody at the state level, down to county commissioners, mayors, or what have you, do not have the ability to actually make a law or enforce any law that abridges the privileges or immunities of the citizens of the United States. What that means is they can't tell you you can't assemble. They can't tell you that you can't worship. You can't go to church and worship. You can't, you know, get out and commit commerce and engage in commerce activity. They have no authority to do all of these things that they've done. They have violated your fundamental rights as U.S. citizens in the interest of emergency powers and for health purposes. We're going through this. Nowhere so far have I mentioned any assertion or any clause that says, that states, whatever we say, you know, whatever the Constitution protects, it can be suspended for emergency powers purposes. We're not going to find that. And we're not going to find, oh, well, for health purposes, we can do these things. Not at all. And as a matter of fact, for a couple centuries now, we have had outbreaks, Ebola, and other types of plagues that have hit the United States. And they never once crossed the boundary of suspending your constitutional rights. And so, clearly, this right here is the laser-guided munition that we need to go after your politicians, your public servants. They don't have the authority to do what they've been doing. Why isn't anybody else stating this? Why isn't anybody else saying, you need to do something about this? Well, what do? We're going to sue them? No, we don't sue them. We actually use the rest of this Constitution in the third section of the same amendment. We'll get to that. But moving on, it says, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Section 2. Now, this is all about appropriation and apportionment, right? That's what I meant, apportionment, not appropriation. Apportionment is how they count for representation. Section 2 states, representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, counting the whole number of persons in each state, excluding Indians not taxed. But when the right to vote at an election for the choice of electors for president and vice president of the United States, representatives in Congress, the executive and judicial officers of a state, or the members of legislatures thereof is denied to any of the male inhabitants of each such state, being 21 years of age, because this is, you know, this was the parameter for voting at that time, and citizens of the United States, or in any way abridged except for participation in rebellion or other crime, the basis of representation. So technically, if you actually commit rebellion, I want you to notice this. If you commit rebellion or other crime, then you don't have the right to vote. It's right there in the Constitution. And the basis of representation therein shall be reduced in the proportion which the numbers of such males shall bear to the whole number of male citizens 21 years of age in such state. So in other words, if you have somebody in your state that is not able to vote, then they cannot be counted. In other words, illegal aliens cannot be counted for apportionment. And California has 11 extra representatives in Congress because of the illegal aliens. And this coming census, it will probably go up even more because it's become the mecca for illegals. And it has become the state of blight because more and more people are leaving because they can't afford to lose their life and property because the state values illegals over the citizens themselves. They won't protect your property. They won't protect you. That was the real reason why we left out of California, because we were seeing that people who were actual property owners and citizens of the United States had no rights. They were protecting rights and going out of the way to protect illegals instead of basically ensuring that your rights weren't infringed, because we were seeing people that were having to be forced to allow illegals to encamp on their property and so forth. It's gotten ridiculous where they're no longer doing what government should be doing. But here's the meat. This is the big bat within the Constitution that we can use right now in our current crisis. The problem is, why is it that people are not sinking their teeth into this, grabbing a hold of this, and swinging away? Section 3, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, against the Constitution, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, but Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each House, remove such disability. So when you read that, and you actually, what did I just read? You have to put this down into real layman's terms. And so the best way to do that is to try to, you know, do lots of dot, dot, dots, but I'll do my best. I see that we're coming up on a break, but I'll do my best in really boiling this one long section down. No person in the United States, whether you be from Congress, a judicial seat, or a state public servant, if you raise your arm and you take an oath of office to support the Constitution, and while you're under that oath, you have supported rebellion against the Constitution. So what is rebellion against the Constitution? You support violations of the Constitution. Now, what could be a violation? And we're going to really sink our teeth into, and so when we come back, we're going to focus on what a violation of the Constitution would be currently. And I can give you a perfect example, because we're going to go to Article 4, Section 4 when we come back, and I'm going to read something that the United States guarantees every state in the Union. And the federal government has failed to actually protect us as they're stated. So in other words, that's open rebellion against this hardcore requirement. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so what can be rebellion against the Constitution? The Constitution requires, and this is Article 4, Section 4, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union, that I'm going to put dot, dot, dot over a Republican form of government. So I'll say that again. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union, dot, 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 and shall protect them each, or shall protect each of them against invasion. So the United States government is not just supposed to, you know, manage our immigration. They're also supposed to protect each of the states from an invasion. Now, what's an invasion? Unwanted force, unwanted people. When we have a few hundred coming across the border, that's it. One time, yeah, okay, so I wouldn't necessarily leap and say, hey, we're being invaded. But when we have millions and millions of illegals in America that are acting as political combatants, demanding access, demanding their redress of grievances. They're not even U.S. citizens, and they're demanding the redress of grievances and petitioning and wanting to vote and participating in our political processes. I'm sorry, folks, but that is a combatant, a political combatant invader who has no rights to be here. And so the United States government is responsible to stopping and dealing with this invasion. And they every year do nothing. They allow it to happen. Therefore, they are committing open rebellion against the Constitution, which requires them to stop these invasions and protect us from an invading force. To basically, even if they pass DACA and everything else, I'm telling you that they are violating the Constitution by allowing people to become citizens or giving them these preferential treatments like DACA and so forth. What has to happen is they have to actually deport every single one of them. And as a matter of fact, we don't have a right to put them in jail. I don't care if they've committed crimes. They have no business being here, and they need to build a wall. They need to do whatever to keep people from just being able to come into America. As much as nice as it is here, I don't think we need to have really stringent processes and requirements. It's okay to have people come across, but to just create unconstitutional citizenship because somebody happened to have a baby here, I'm sorry, that ain't happening either. The 14th Amendment was very clear. And so Section 3 is very clear that Congress must, because they've taken an oath, they must support the Constitution. They can't cherry pick and say, well, we're not going to do this now. No, you don't have that choice. And if you don't do your job and support the Constitution as the Constitution directs Congress to do, then every single person in Congress who has failed to address the invasion and actually correct this problem is guilty in violating Section 3 because they're supporting rebellion against the same, against the Constitution. And not only that, but the following statement, or given aid and comfort to the enemies thereof. Do you think the people coming across wanting to subvert our Constitution and engage themselves as illegal aliens into our political process, you think they're friends of the Constitution or enemies of the Constitution? Come on, it's real simple. They're enemies of the Constitution. If you're violating, you're going against, you're warring against the Constitution. So this next one, and this actually helps because this galvanizes in the Constitution that the federal government can't actually take on debt for the South. And so with these corporations that were created, the Sovereign Citizen Movement points out that these, you know, the U.S. created these corporations to help pay off these debts that the Southern states took for the Civil War. And listen to what this says. The validity of public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. But neither the United States nor any state shall assume or pay any debt or obligation incurred in aid of insurrection or rebellion against the United States, or any claim of law for loss or emancipation for any slave, but all such debts, obligations, and claims shall be held illegal and void. I want you to understand, my friends, if you look at what this argument is all about regarding the Sovereign Citizens Movement, the federal government had to violate this clause right here to actually go down the path of paying for. And so if you do the research, and there's plenty of people out there researching these corporations, the Sovereign Citizen Movement and so forth. Anna von Ritz is probably one of the big leaders or champions of the Sovereign Citizen Movement. Bottom line, it's what the federal government has done is unconstitutional. And what we need to do is not check out and become sovereign citizens. What we really need to do is force the federal government into compliance and dismantle these unconstitutional corporations. And then here's the little clause that they started kicking in with every amendment going forward practically. The Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. Now, the 15th Amendment is basically, this was proposed in 1869 and ratified in 1870. The right of the citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or provision condition of servitude. So they had to come back and create this one amendment because the Southern states were basically saying, we're not going to allow, they outright made it illegal, the Southern Democrats made it illegal to allow blacks to vote. Now that went out, and that absolutely violated the 14th Amendment. But just to be even more certain and clear, Congress had to reconvene, or I should say, during their next session, actually it was two sessions later, in 69. Let me see, they proposed the 14th, yeah, in 66. So it was three sessions later. The right of the citizen to vote shall not be denied by race, color, or previous condition of servitude. And so they had to actually make another amendment to force these bad Democrats. Friends, if you don't realize that the Democrats have been the opponent of liberty and justice and individual sovereignty, then all you got to do is look at the Constitution and then look at what these amendments were really doing. They were confronting these Southern Democrats head on and saying, you don't have a right to do these things. The 16th Amendment. Now, this is questionably ratified by Bob Benson. This was proposed in 1909 and again questionably ratified in 1913. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any consensus or enumeration. But what this doesn't do is it doesn't take away the uniformity in how they're to apply this impost or tax. Go look at Article 1, Section 8, the uniformity requirement. This does not mean that they can actually punish people because you make too much money and give money to other people because they don't make enough. What this states is that they have the ability to actually collect, lay and collect taxes on income, but it does not give them the right to be able to create progressive or punitive types of taxes. The 17th Amendment. Now, this was proposed in 1912 and ratified in 1913. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state, elected by the people thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. The electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for the electors of the utmost numerous branch of the state legislature. When vacancies happen in the representation of any state in the Senate, the executive authority of such state shall issue two writs of election to fill such vacancy, provided that the legislature of the state may empower the executive thereof to make temporary appointments until the people fill the vacancies by election as the legislature may direct. This amendment shall not be construed to as affect the election or term of any senator chosen before it becomes valid as a part of the Constitution. This was strictly, and this is what I mentioned before, this was strictly to move the process of appointments of senators in Congress from the state legislatures who basically made those appointments to an election or to a general election process where we the people elected our senators. And so what this really did was it just perverted who the senators were supposed to be responding to, but it didn't change their responsibility of responding to the state legislatures. So in other words, it was very undermining and it was problematic, but it wasn't as bad as everybody really makes it out to be. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.